There is today no other country in Europe that is more heavily divided between two different regions than Italy. It seems that nearly no matter what kind of map you show over Italy, the country is sharply divided between its north and its south. Here's a map of Italy's population density from 2011 that shows significantly closer together major population centers in the north of Italy than in the south. Here's a map that shows all of the major modern highways of Italy, which again shows a much more dense network of highways and infrastructure built up in the north of Italy than in the southern half of the country. Here's a more recent map from 2021 that shows the percentage of residents in each Italian region who attend a place of worship at least once per week, where you can again see a quite clear divide between the north and the south of the country, with a level of religious attendance being higher in the south than further north. Or how about these two maps that show the voter turnout rates across Italy during the country's general elections in 2001 and 2013, that show, again, a clear divide between how many people participate in elections in the north and the south of the country. There's really almost endless kinds of these maps that show stark differences between the north and the south of Italy. But two of the most useful variables to measure the gulf of differences between them today are their differences in Human Development Index, or HDI scores, and their differences in GDP per capita. HDI is a score between 0 and 1 that's measured by the United Nations that considers a region's access to healthcare, access to education, income levels, and overall living conditions as factors that affect the overall score, with a 0 being the lowest and a 1 being the absolute highest. And this is the map of Italian regions by HDI score in 2017, which again shows a clear difference in scores and development between the north and the south of the country, almost as if it were a perfect gradient. The further south you go in Italy, the less developed it becomes. Now, before we get much further though, it's important to clarify that while there is a significant disparity between northern and southern Italy in terms of development and economic output, that's not to say that southern Italy is exactly poor or highly underdeveloped. The HDI scores that were recorded in even the least developed regions of Italy in Calabria and Sicily were measured at a 0.859, which are underdeveloped by the standards of anywhere else in Western Europe, but are still quite high globally, coming out to about the same as the average HDI score seen in places like Argentina, Chile, or Turkey, and above the global average. But when it comes to GDP per capita in Italy, the differences are also starkly visible between the north and the south, as shown in this map, which details the GDP per person as a percentage of the nationwide Italian average as recently as 2021. Here, you can see that all across southern Italy, the economic output of its citizens is significantly lower than the output of Italians across the north of the country. Southern Italy, usually defined as everything south of this line on the map, consists of about one-third of Italy's total territory and about one-third of Italy's total population, but also only represents about one-fourth of Italy's total GDP. And this situation has led to some economists, such as the former Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi, who resigned in 2022, to describe the whole region of southern Italy as the largest and most populated underdeveloped region in the euro area. The southernmost and least developed regions of Italy, Calabria and Sicily, have nominal GDP per capitas as of 2022 that are about on a par with Uruguay and Greece, while northern regions like Lombardy and Trentino have GDP per capitas that are even higher than Germany and the UK. The economic disparity extends perhaps even more clearly into the realm of employment in maps like this one, where you can clearly see how much more southern Italians struggle with employment than their peers in the north do. In the southern regions of Sicily, Calabria, and Campania, unemployment rates as recently as 2023 were each more than 16% of their total labor forces, four times the unemployment rate seen in some northern regions like Lombardy and Veneto, and on a par with some of the worst unemployment rates seen globally anywhere in the world today, approaching the level seen in much more geopolitically troubled corners of the world like Kosovo or Libya. The overall economic disparities between northern and southern Italy have grown so wide by this point that it's often been said that they now even exceed the differences within Germany between the former communist East and capitalist West of the country. So, why does this huge chasm of a difference exist in nearly all aspects of economic and social life within Italy today? There are many, many potential explanations. But one of the most peculiar things about Italy's regional economic divide, compared to pretty much any other country in the world, is the way in which it has persisted around for literally hundreds of years by this point, in a way that's lingered around for far longer than nearly any other country's regional divide has existed for. And in many ways, it's a divide that has been getting worse in recent times than most other countries' regional divides have, such as East and West Germany. One of the most immediate sources of the divide that you can spot by studying the map simply stems from the differences in geography between the north and the south that have existed throughout human history in Italy going back for thousands of years now, and how geography generally tends to favor the north. The single most remarkable geographic feature in the whole of the Italian peninsula is this huge, low-lying plain in the north that's either referred to as the Padan Plain or as the Po Valley, named after the Po River that flows almost through the center of the plain, fed by its many tributaries that begin in the Alps mountain range to the north and from the Apennine mountain range to the south. The Po Valley, as I'll call it from here on out, is the largest continuous area of flat land that can be found anywhere in the whole of southern Europe. At least if you define the geographic extent of southern Europe as the same area that the United Nations does. Southern Europe is generally rugged, hilly, and mountainous pretty much everywhere outside of the Po Valley. And this remains true within Italy, with the massive Alps enclosing the valley to the north and the west, and the Apennine Mountains enclosing it to the south that stretches clear across the Italian peninsula all the way to the south, forming the so-called spine of Italy. The Po River itself that flows through the valley is also the longest river that can be found in Italy, and it's generally regarded as the country's most navigable river for commerce and trade as well, with the lower reaches of the river extending from about modern-day Cremona out towards the Adriatic Sea being regarded as the most navigable section of river in all of Italy due to its usual year-round deep and calm waters. In terms of overall area, the Po Valley is a little larger than the Netherlands is, and they have nearly identical populations and urban densities today as well, with 17 million people, or about a third of modern Italy's population, all residing in the valley. The Po Valley offers up a larger, flatter area to build cities in and to develop infrastructure for more cheaply than anywhere else in Italy does, where the mountains of the Alps to the north and the Apennines to the south and the hills surrounding them make development and infrastructure more time-consuming and expensive to construct. But that's far from the Po Valley's only geographic advantages over anywhere else in Italy. The valley is located directly adjacent to the huge freshwater reserves found in the towering Alps to the north that flow down throughout the Po Valley and its rivers and streams, which means that the Po Valley simply has better access to more freshwater resources than can be found in southern Italy. This map, based on data that was collected by the European Environment Agency in 1995, shows the levels of water stress seen throughout Italy with a clear divide between northern Italy and southern Italy, with levels of severe water stress being much more acutely visible in the south than in the north. Moreover, this more recent map compiled by the World Wildlife Fund in 2022 shows the risk of water scarcity developing across Italy by 2050, which essentially confirms what was shown by the data that the previous map from 1995 showed. Southern Italy is at a substantially greater risk of developing acute water scarcity conditions than northern Italy is. Southern Italy has therefore faced worse prospects of drought throughout its history than northern Italy has. And with its significantly larger open fields throughout the Po Valley fertilized by glacial runoff coming in through the many rivers and streams down from the Alps, the Po Valley became the most obvious site in the whole peninsula for large-scale, intensive agriculture to be performed in, which gave rise to many of Italy's largest and most powerful cities emerging within the valley, like Turin, Milan, Bologna, Padua, Verona, and Venice, along with major satellite cities located very nearby to the plain with their own synergizing geographic advantages like Trieste, Florence, and Genoa. Still to this day in 2024, the biggest and busiest ports in Italy in terms of gross tonnage are the ports of Trieste and Genoa, which have each been majorly important ports to Italy for centuries now, owing to their large, natural, and easily defensible deep-water harbors located so nearby to the large population centers that arose within the Po Valley, and their ability to all serve as a crossroads of sorts to facilitate trade routes between the Mediterranean region and inland Europe. Southern Italy has several very good natural deep-water harbors and ports as well, and many of these handle significant amounts of cargo today as well. But none of them as much as Trieste and Genoa do, which flank the Po Valley on the east and the west. Moreover, the Po Valley in northern Italy is simply geographically much closer to the rest of Europe than southern Italy is, which makes the Po Valley the natural region of southern Europe to serve as the crossroads of trade between the Mediterranean and deeper into Europe like Germany. And the advantages still don't stop there for the north either. This is a tectonic map of Italy that shows the risk of earthquakes taking place throughout the country in a given 50-year period. Overall, the spine of the Apennine Mountains that stretches through central and southern Italy is the most geologically active part of the peninsula and is a major fault zone, which exposes southern Italy to a much greater degree of risk to earthquakes and other seismic events than northern Italy is exposed to, save for the small corner of the northeast of Italy. Over the time span of centuries, this means that southern Italy has been rocked by many more economically destructive earthquakes than northern Italy has been, which has further contributed to the region's economic disadvantages relative to the north. And earthquakes aren't the only natural disasters in Italy that the south is more exposed to either, because there's also the threat of devastating volcanic eruptions as well. This is a map of every currently active volcano in Italy, and as you can see, none of them are located in the north of Italy. Notably, the volcanoes that are located on the boot part of Italy are the only active volcanoes located on the entirety of mainland Europe, with the rest of Europe's volcanoes being located on islands rather than on the mainland. Four of Italy's volcanoes have erupted recently in the past 150 years. Vulcano and Stromboli in the Aeolian Islands to the north of Sicily, and much more infamously and destructive, Mount Vesuvius near modern-day Naples and Mount Etna in eastern Sicily, right next to the city of Catania. Each of these volcanoes offer up some important advantages towards a civilization, like rich volcanic soil and the potential for geothermal energy, which is a part of the explanation for why the areas immediately adjacent to the volcanoes are some of the most densely populated areas that can be found in southern Italy. But of course, their disadvantages compared to northern cities are that the volcanoes can just blow up and wreck the settlements next to them. The most infamous example of this was when Mount Vesuvius erupted in 79 CE and wiped out the neighboring Roman city of Pompeii. But it also erupted again in 1631 and killed thousands of people in neighboring Naples in that eruption too. Today, the volcano remains dangerously active and it hangs over the heads of the around 3 million plus people who live in Naples and other cities nearby who are close enough to be affected by a potential eruption, which, along with the tectonic risks and earthquake chances in the region, would make any business owner second-guess the risks of establishing themselves in the area versus in the north, where the natural disaster risks are substantially lower overall. Moreover, because the north contains the Po Valley that's located directly south of the Alps, which are much, much higher mountains than the southern Apennines are, they also have access to all of the rivers and streams that plunge down the mountains on their way down the valley, which grants them access to huge amounts of hydroelectricity potential in addition to their freshwater access. I mean, just look at this map that showcases the maximum hydroelectric potential that can be found across Italy. And once again, you can see that the north possesses significantly more available access to hydropower than the south does. Italy is overall the 18th largest producer of hydroelectricity in the world today, and about 14.5% of their total nationwide electricity is generated through hydro. But nearly all of that generation takes place in the north of the country. The northern regions of Piedmont, Lombardy, and Trentino-Alto Adige alone produce more than 60% of the whole country's hydroelectricity today, which again only further exacerbates the inherent geographic advantages to development seen in the north of Italy relative to the south. Overall, these many geographic advantages that the north possesses to development, from the large expanse of flat land in the Po Valley, fed by rich glacial runoff from the Alps that enabled it to become Italy's agricultural powerhouse, to the large natural deepwater harbors nearby to the Po Valley in Genoa and Trieste that made it the ideal crossroads for trade and commerce between the Mediterranean and the European interior, to the dramatically lower risks of natural disasters from earthquakes and volcanic eruptions that the south is more exposed to the significantly more rugged terrain that is harder to develop and build upon in the south, to the abundance of cheap and plentiful hydropower in the north that was largely absent in the south, all combined to ensure that Italian industry would also more heavily concentrate within the Po Valley in Italy's north rather than in its south. For example, this map that was created in 1972 shows the concentrations of various different kinds of industries within Italy at the time, with the larger circles and segments indicating relatively larger importance. As you can see, already by the early 1970s, the north of Italy, with all of its advantages I just explained above, had way, way, way more concentrated industry going on there than in the south, with the only really notable industrial area in the south at all at the time being Naples. Nearly two decades later, in 1989, northern Italy's massive concentration of industries led to a group of French geographers led by Roger Brunet to come up with the concept of the blue banana in modern Europe, which Brunet and his team described as the industrial and urban backbone of modern Europe, encompassing the continent's most densely populated, heavily urbanized, and industrial regions, stretching from Liverpool and Manchester in the UK through London, the Benelux states, the Rhineland in Germany, Switzerland, and the heavy industries located throughout the Po Valley in northern Italy, which again, as a concept, shows just how much more geographically connected and integrated northern Italy is with the rest of Europe than southern Italy is, which enables northern Italy to more easily trade with the rest of Europe for more cheaply than southern Italy is able to do, which enables northern Italy to retain higher amounts of capital through trade than southern Italy is capable of doing. And yet, there are other factors at play that potentially influence the north-south divide in Italy besides geography as well. One of the other principal factors that has to play at least some kind of influence is the peninsula's history, and how the peninsula's geography helped to shape that history. For nearly all of Italy's modern history, from the collapse of the Roman Empire in the 5th century CE to the unification of Italy nearly 1,400 years later in 1861, the Italian peninsula was divided between several different powers, both external and internal, who had wildly different ideas concerning government types and institutions. A situation that lasted for so long and that was so deeply ingrained in Italy that Clemens von Metternich, the most famous Austrian statesman of the 19th century, once described Italy as a mere geographical expression. While the French and the Austrians each ruled over large sections of northern Italy at various times throughout that history, the extent of foreign rule from beyond the Italian peninsula was substantially longer lasting and more deeply entrenched in the south of Italy than in the north. After the fall of the Roman Empire, parts of southern Italy were ruled by the Greek-dominated Byzantine Empire intermittently for centuries between 553 and 1130 CE. The Arabs conquered Sicily in 827 CE, which lasted for another 2.5 centuries until the Normans, another group of outsiders, conquered Sicily from them again in 1091. And then they stuck around for about another century. The Spanish Crown of Aragon eventually managed to conquer Sicily by 1282, and then extended their control over the Kingdom of Naples on the Italian mainland by 1442, which ushered in centuries of direct Spanish control over the whole of southern Italy that lasted all the way up until the Treaty of Utrecht in 1713. After which, the kingdoms of Naples and Sicily were handed over to the Austrian Habsburgs for a couple of decades up until 1735, when each of the kingdoms of Sicily and Naples were both taken back over by the Spanish again, and a Spaniard named Charles VII from the Bourbon dynasty rose to become their king, who was a guy who actually lived in Naples during his reign and was notably the first king to reign over southern Italy who actually lived there personally in about 230 years. The long reign of foreign powers throughout southern Italy established a culture of absentee landlords, large landholdings worked by peasants, and feudalism that persisted for much longer than it did in the north, which for centuries after the Middle Ages was controlled by various thriving, independently governed communes and city-states that built up large amounts of trust or social capital between the people who lived there and the institutions they built. Southern Italy developed completely differently from an institutional perspective than northern Italy did as a result. The south of Italy was prevented from managing its own affairs for centuries, and its exploitation by outside monarchies and people throughout that whole period prevented the emergence of a strong middle class and prevented solid investments from being made in the people who actually lived there, which in turn built up a sense of resentment and distrust towards the government in the south, and a cycle in which both the eventual unified Italian government and the south of the country would end up regarding each other with mutual trepidation, with the south sometimes viewing the north as just another in a long line of historical colonial overlords, and the north viewing the south as a drain on their own welfare. in 1859, just a couple of years before Italy would become the unified modern country that we know it as today, the differences between the north and the south of the country were already significant. That year, it was recorded that northern Italy had a total of roughly 75,500 kilometers worth of roads and 2,316 kilometers of railroads, compared to a paltry 14,700 kilometers worth of roads in the south and just 184 kilometers of railroads that were almost entirely just built around the city of Naples. Meaning that southern Italy had just 1/5 of the road infrastructure that the north had and only about 1/12 of the railroad infrastructure as the north at the time of Italian unification in 1861. And infrastructure was far from the only thing that the south needed to catch up on. At the time in 1861, when the peninsula unified, the north was producing about 17,000 tons of iron and steel per year, compared with only 1,500 tons of iron and steel that were produced by the south, showing how much more industrialized the north already was than the south at the time. In 1861, a mere 18% of the population in Campania were literate, and only 13% of the population in Sicily were, compared with literacy rates as high as 51% in northern regions like Piedmont and 49% in Lombardy. So from the very beginning of Italian unification in 1861, southern Italy's economic and political structures were already exploitative following centuries of feudal and foreign rule in the region. And combined with all of the geographic factors that I explained during the first half of this video, southern Italy was almost primed from the start to lag behind the north in development and economic well-being. But while the historical legacies of feudalism and external governance are factors that could have influenced southern Italy to lag behind, there's also a significant divide between the north and the south that emerged after unification as well. Feudalism and foreign rule in the south, and independent city-states and self-ruling communes in the north, weren't necessarily the deciding factors on their own. The feudal monarchy in the south was not unlike other feudal governments that ruled for centuries until fairly recently historically in Spain, Germany, and Japan. And it's not very clear today that any of those countries were held back by their late-lasting vestiges of feudalism. And across the 20th century, many nations and regions today that are more prosperous than southern Italy faced horrors that make southern Italy's historically negative inheritance seem pretty tame by comparison, such as Germany or Japan. After the unification of Italy, the existing divide between the north and the south of the country gradually became more pronounced in more ways than one. The new Kingdom of Italy doubled down with even more heavy investments into the north's already booming industrial economy and introduced protectionist tariff policies in the late 1870s and 1880s to even further benefit it, while simultaneously punishing the south's primarily agricultural exports at the same time. In the north, employment in the industrial sector skyrocketed from 26% in 1891 to 33% a couple decades later by 1911, and then up to a whopping 41% by the middle of the century in 1951. Conversely, during that same time period in southern Italy, employment within the industrial sector actually fell, from 25% in 1891 down to only 21% by 1911, and down even further to just about 17% by the middle of the century in 1951. And the north-south divide continued to grow even more significantly during and after the First and Second World Wars. Industrial production for the Italian war effort was heavily concentrated within the industrialized north, especially within the northwest in a powerful triangle made up of Piedmont, Lombardy, and Liguria. Without these industries, the south simply began losing huge swaths of its economically active population as droves of young men were conscripted for the wars and sent off to fight, while millions of others just decided to leave southern Italy for better employment opportunities in the north of the country, in other areas of Europe, or to the Americas, creating a devastating and long-lasting brain drain from southern Italy that in many ways continues to this day, in a cycle that only further exacerbates and perpetuates southern Italy's struggles to catch up with the developments seen in the north. Fast forward far enough to today, and you wind up with this map of Italy's most valuable brands by market cap, having their headquarters distributed across the country in a way that looks like this. With almost all of the most valuable and well-known Italian companies and brands that you've ever heard of being densely concentrated in the north of the country, from car companies like Ferrari, Lamborghini, and Fiat, to high-end fashion companies like Prada and Versace. Most of the high-paying jobs in Italy in these major industries are located in the north today as a legacy of Italy's geography and history, while most of the jobs in the south are still agricultural or relate to the public sector, and generally pay significantly less. And that, all in a nutshell, is why southern Italy has been poorer than northern Italy for generations now, and why it will continue being difficult for southern Italy to catch up with the north in the future. More than half of all industrial activity in modern-day Italy is located in the north of the country. But industry isn't the only economic sector that's much more dominant in northern Italy either. Tourism is another major component of the overall Italian economy, as the country is one of the top five most heavily visited in the entire world today. And as of 2023, the tourism industry in Italy contributed about 10% towards the whole country's GDP, and generated more than 1 million jobs. But again, the division of where international tourists actually go in Italy and where they spend their money in is highly uneven between the north and the south. Based on Italian tourism data from 2019, the various regions of Italy collectively received a total of about 221.5 million visits from international tourists throughout the year. But a whopping 60% of all those foreign tourists visited locations in the north of Italy. Another 25% of them visited the center of Italy, and only a relatively paltry 15% of them ever actually visited the south of Italy. Again, showing a gradient of tourist interest in Italy that is heavily concentrated in the north and the center and less focused on the south. Northern Italy, despite having a similar population and encompassing a similarly sized geographic area, managed to attract roughly 4 times as many tourists to their region in 2019 than southern Italy managed, and reaped all of the corresponding economic and employment benefits to match. This is rather strange because other locations across southern Europe do much better in attracting tourism than southern Italy does. Barcelona, for example, routinely attracts nearly twice as many tourists per year as Naples does today, the largest city in southern Italy, while the Spanish Balearic Islands all on their own attract more than half as many tourists per year than the whole of southern Italy combined does, despite their much smaller geographic size. To me, this suggests that southern Italy's tourism potential is currently being severely underutilized and could be boosted in the future if the correct steps are taken. And in the meantime, if you're planning a visit to Italy either in the south or the north or anywhere else abroad in the world, you're gonna need a good data plan before you go, which you can do with this video sponsor, Saily. Saily is an incredible new eSIM service app from Nord Security. Because if you've ever been lost abroad or badly need an internet connection with no Wi-Fi in sight, you'll understand the difference a local SIM card can make. I would never travel without one, because an eSIM provides an internet connection wherever you travel, and saves you a ton of money on roaming fees, and you can buy the right amount of data you actually want. Saily lets you choose from multiple affordable eSIM plans in more than 150 different countries. That way, you can get tons of data and never have to worry about your tourist photos uploading in the background and eating up all of your data. Recently, I traveled to Spain for a couple of weeks, and getting an eSIM there was the best decision I ever could have made. If you've ever tried to get around a subway system in a foreign country with a predominant foreign language that you don't understand without Google Maps, you know exactly how important it is to have good internet service. And while my friends who were with me were dealing with roaming fees and having their cellular data throttled, I could still navigate and plan daily activities while using ultra-fast internet wherever I went. I could even use my phone as a personal hotspot, too. Plus, with the Saily app, getting an eSIM couldn't be any easier. You just buy a plan and activate it, all on the Saily app or website. And once you've got it activated, you're good to use the internet wherever you go without needing to waste any time hunting for cafes or coffee shops that hopefully have some public Wi-Fi. And of course, there's no waiting for a physical SIM card or having to switch one out either. And all Saily eSIM plans are compatible with iOS and Android devices. And of course, an eSIM with Saily also means there's no need to wait in line at a local airport to get a local SIM. And an eSIM can be installed only once, eliminating the need for users to install a brand new eSIM for each new country you visit so you're covered virtually wherever you're going. So click on the link below or use the code REALLIFELORE to get an exclusive 15% off of your first purchase. A Saily eSIM really is a traveler's best friend, and it's the best decision you can make before going to visit another country. So click the link below right now to get 15% off of your first purchase. And as always, thank you so much for watching.